Blog Talk Radio.
Lay your hands on the radio. Lay your hands on the radio there in the home.
It's that psychedelic time of the year. Do you know where your brain cells are?
Blog Talk Radio.
You know, there's an enormous industry in this nation that is churning out day after day at the cost of billions of dollars the sensation, entirely erroneous, in the body politic that everything is okay and everything's going to keep on being just the way it is now on into the indefinite future. But of course,
Radio Free Canada
have not purchased that bill of goods.
Remember, all I'm offering is the truth.
You can handle the truth!
Welcome to Radio Free Kansas.
Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Dell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas.
Wasn't so secret. Signs and chanted slogans outside the resort where the Koch meeting was going on. It was the first time one of these billionaire gatherings was met with a demonstration. Former Democratic Congressman Bob Edgar, president of the watchdog group Common Cause, explained why they were there.
In the buildings behind me, David and Charles Koch are organizing corporate leaders, political leaders, financial leaders, including leaders of the Republican side of the House of Representatives, to organize for the 2012 election. Sometimes in this society, the only way that you can get attention is to shine a public light. And this is a civil, public demonstration of concern about the corrosive influence of money.
But while the protesters may have pulled back the public curtain on the meeting of powerful anti-government conservatives, we need to make sure everyone knows that Koch Industries is one of the primary sources of pollution in the United States. How much they pollute, well, we can't say, and they want to keep it that way. Since there is no mandatory carbon reporting in the United States, Koch Industries has a lot to lose if we move ahead on climate change legislation and energy independence. Think Progress estimates the Kochs would be paying up to $40 billion a year if they had to take on the cost of their yearly pollution. They funneled $55 million to climate denial organizations since 1997. And if you think Saturday's meeting didn't have anything to do with continuing this funding, consider this. Participants at their previous meeting in Aspen contributed more than $61 million to political campaigns in the last two decades. Keep that in mind the next time the Koch brothers decide to hold a secret meeting in your town.
Welcome to Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Mike Adell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County. It's a great show we got lined up. We've got lots of audio clips from a recent February 26th. That was just last Saturday. It was a time, good grief, on the south lawn of the Topeka State Capitol building where I would say, you know, I know how people are about estimating numbers. 500 to 1,000 people showed up. 500 to 1,000 people showed up outside in the bitter cold to demonstrate about union rights against the state legislature's laws that are being proposed right now and the state government. You know, many of you out there in Kansas are totally disconnected from what's going on. Most of you are busy trying to make a struggle, about your living wages, about the hours you're working, the amount of dollars you're paying for a gallon of gas. This is a show for you. I want to give it to you and let you. I'm going to play some excerpts. These are just short, very short audio clips. Very short audio clips. Of course, all of you that are working and are making a good living, pay no heed. Do not care about the people below you. Do not care about the state legislatures that are passing laws. Do not think about anything except getting drunk on football Sunday and look at each other's tits for all I care. Here is some music, and we'll get back to the clips. The smart-ass, well-paid, rich workers, get with it, man. There's power in the union.
Would you have freedom from wage slavery? Then come join the grand industrial band. Would you from misery and hunger be free? Come on, do your share, lend a hand.
There is power, there is power in a band of working folks when they stand hand in hand. That's the power, that's the power that was ruling every land. One industrial union grand.
Would you have mansions of gold in the sky and live in a shack way in the back? Would you have wings up in heaven to fly and stay here with rags on your back?
There is power, there is power in the hands of working folk when they stand.
Blood of the Lamb, then come join the grand industrial band. If for a change you'd have eggs and ham, come on, do your share, lend a hand.
There is power, there is power in the band of working folk when we stand.
Beat on your head, then don't organize, all unions despise. If you'd have nothing before you're dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise.
There is power in a man of working folks when they stand.
Come on, do your share, lend a hand.
There is power in a man of working folk when they stand hand in hand. That's the power that comes through in every land for industrial union grand.
All
George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth defied dead, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws, the
shine us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Uckie Bacall with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. Today's episode is inspired by my mother. For some reason, my mother almost never listens to the broadcast, although at her request I've showed her many times and written out how to access the show through going to the complete archives at www.radioforall.net and searching for Bucky, or by visiting www.buckybacall.org and clicking on the sample shows there. She grew up on a very small dairy farm, and when she was very young, they kept a few chickens, so sometimes I think she's over it, so to speak. I've noticed that some folks who grew up with agriculture move off the farm and never want to revisit any of it, while others feel trapped in an urban or suburban life and long to return to the farm. And it's not like the former necessarily had a bad experience, or the latter never experienced hardship. Sometimes it seems almost random. Conversely, I find there's no way of predicting whether folks who grew up urban, like me, will militantly avoid all exposure to the actual production of so much as a geranium, or become completely fascinated with food production and move to a farm or start, say, an urban chickening movement. I'm not sure which category Mom is in, but although she never listens to this broadcast, lately she spends a lot of time telling friends and distant relatives I've never met all about it. I'm glad she's proud to promote the broadcast and the agenda, because between my demanding job in a distinctly non-agricultural enterprise and my other passion, crooning to my ukulele as Roberto Buscarsi, I don't pimp the broadcast as often as I'd like to. Also, she sometimes gets feedback, which she promptly forwards to me, that comes from a perspective I rarely hear directly, that of people who felt pressured to listen to the show by a third party and aren't already fans, friends, or fellow chickeners. Last week, she forwarded an email from a distant second aunt once removed via second marriage or some such, and at first I just rolled my eyes in exasperation, but I quickly changed my mind and realized it was just the kind of question those of us carrying the backyard agenda need to be ready to respond to, so I'm going to share it.
Interesting article in the Huffington Post you sent. A real good picture of your son and his friend or fiancé or whatever. I hope they are aware of the health problems from living with these chickens. When I was 15, I had a chest x-ray and an infection showed up, which was histoplasmosis. I had to have skin tests every few weeks for quite some time. They said it was caused from being around pigs and chickens, which my family raised. I'm very allergic to feathers.
I have to admit, I dismiss this offhand as being an obvious case of her family keeping too many chickens in too small an area and not cleaning often enough. I also suspected that she was probably a sickly or malnourished child and that her weak immune system made her susceptible. But on second thought, I decided to refresh my memory on my knowledge of histoplasmosis and do some basic research to see what credible sources were saying about the disease and microflock chickening. I consulted the Disease Control and Prevention, acronym CDC, website, www.cdc.gov, a very mainstream source, as well as a bunch of other agricultural extension offices and a few internet discussion boards, and for the most part, I confirmed my impression. Histoplasmosis, a disease that mostly affects the lungs, but sometimes also the eyes, is caused by a fungus. I remember once having a phlegmy cough for 3 solid weeks and becoming convinced there was a mushroom culture in my lungs, but that was during the period when I moved back to New York and given up chickening for over a year. At any rate, the fungus can be carried in the poop of any animal. Fertile, nitrogen-rich poop is its favorite medium, so that's where birds, bats, and chickens come in. The fungus has been found in poultry house litter, caves, areas harboring bats, and in bird roosts, particularly those of starlings. It thrives in crowded, unhygienic conditions, and is actually kind of difficult to catch most of the time. Histoplasmosis is not contagious. A person can only get it by inhalation of the fungus spores from infected soil that becomes airborne. As with many pathogens, sunlight kills it. It only thrives in moist, warm environments, but is unlikely to spread unless conditions then become dry enough for the spores to spread. According to the CDC, 99% of histoplasmosis cases are found in the Ohio and Mississippi River Valley. Kentuckians and Floridians tend to know about it. Johnny Cash sings about catching it from bird droppings in his song Beans for Breakfast. It's rare in New York, less than a dozen cases a year, and the New York State Department of Health doesn't specify how many are associated with chickens. In Idaho, it's even more rare, and reported cases are associated with bat caves. In truth, the actual number of infections is probably higher, but that's because the vast majority of infectees experience no symptoms, or symptoms so mild medical attention is not sought, and the fungus runs its course. People with suppressed immune systems are more likely to be symptomatic. Somewhat famously, Bob Dylan was hospitalized due to histoplasmosis in 1997, causing the cancellation of concerts in the United Kingdom and Switzerland. However, even in the worst cases, it's treatable with antifungal medications. To be fair to my second step aunt once removed, medical treatment may have not been as developed in her childhood years. An infection usually results in higher resistance to subsequent infection. The list of at-risk occupations from CDC include bridge inspector or painter, chimney cleaner, construction worker, demolition worker, farm laborer, that probably means factory farm, landscaper and gardeners, heating and air conditioning system installers or service persons, microbiology laboratory workers, pest control workers, restorer of historic or abandoned buildings, roofers, and spelunkers, which is a cave explorer if you didn't know. I didn't know that was an official occupation. Anyway, histoplasmosis is known to be an occupational disease associated with people who are exposed repeatedly to the unique conditions in which it thrives and is likely to be disturbed. Not casual gardeners or home improvers or casual cave explorers. And the main point of the CDC pamphlet is that a good face mask is adequate prevention when working in the high-risk conditions described. Just to reiterate, where does it thrive? Crowded, unhygienic conditions. The kind of conditions where most eggs are produced. So buying your eggs from a grocery store may mean you've reduced your personal risk of contracting it. From chickens, not from spelunking. But in any case, the risk is now being absorbed by strangers working on your behalf, whose occupation and safety rating you probably have no clue of. Furthermore, if we, as a community of concerned humans, are interested in eliminating the histoplasmosis menace by reducing the number of mediums where it can thrive, then it would be our duty to all transition to backyard chickens as a source of eggs. Interestingly, my mother asked if histoplasmosis is the same thing from cat litter boxes. The answer is no, that's toxoplasmosis. And it's not a fungus. It's a rare parasitic disease that can cause serious birth defects. For the most part, concerns about toxoplasmosis are similarly overblown, although that's a show for Kitty McMeow's Precious Feline Pet broadcast. However, it does bring up an interesting perspective point. The CDC lists three diseases associated with birds, avoidable if common sense hygienic precautions are not taken. They are psittacosis, a bacterial disease associated with exotic pet birds like cockatiels, conures, and macaws, but also reported in poultry. Cryptococcus, another fungal disease, but almost entirely associated with wild bird droppings. And Salmonella, a bacterial disease that is associated with many birds, especially chickens, baby chicks, and ducklings, but also found in pet reptiles, but most commonly of all, with food from factory farms. Go to the Radio for All archives to hear my show responding to the 500 million eggs that were recalled in the United States due to salmonella contamination last year. In contrast, the CDC lists 15 diseases associated with humans living with dogs, and 14 for those with pet cats. With all due respect to indoor mammal pet keepers, when I hear of urban city councils denying backyard coop permits, or landlords changing their mind about allowing their renters to keep chickens because of disease concerns, in cities full of cats and dogs, not to mention rats, pigeons, and cockroaches, I have to say, get a grip. As always, I invite listeners to send me text emails or even better sound files with their own voices, with their own experiences related to this show on preventing or avoiding disease or on any other topic that inspires you. And even intelligent challenges to the Bacaw agenda are welcome. Hearing from you makes my day and keeps the show vital. In health and having a good time, this is Bucky Bacaw.
Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with the support of Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
Reading that paper. I think I left about the same time.
They're very interesting clips, and I'd like to play Here's one I really am happy. It's only like 30 seconds. Hang on the line.
I'm gonna hang up and I'll call you back. Go ahead and play them. I'm gonna hang up and call you back later because we're fixing lunch now, and it's hell
okay.
Trying great cheese and talk on telephone at the same time. It's
That's
almost
cool.
impossible. I was holding the grater down with my elbow. Anyway,
well,
I'm gonna hang up and listen to your clips,
okay.
And I'll call you back.
Okay, and we have three other callers on. Now, I want to remind callers who call in that they need to
press key number one
if you want to get on air. Now, you can call in and listen all you want, but please, if you want to talk between clips and songs, push one, because I really won't know about it until then that you want to talk. But here are clips, and I'll introduce some of the clips. Let's see here. This is the first one. This is the first one on the rally that occurred on the south side of the state capitol, state house building in Topeka, Kansas, yesterday. I'm real happy to bring them on. Here is the first one. Now, I like this part. I'm going to play it to set the tempo of what happened there. Well, there was like 500 to 1,000. I would say 500 to 1,000 protesters outside the state capitol building. I was very impressed with the turnout. Lots of union workers of iron workers, painters union, local 3043, Teamsters. I was really blown away by the response of the union locals in Kansas coming to protest about the cutbacks going on. And interestingly enough, people with the Kansas National Education Association, it wasn't just teachers. Actually, there was very few teachers represented there at the demonstration there yesterday in Topeka. I was really overwhelmed with the response. I thought it was one of the best things I'd seen in the state of Kansas in years, really years of great time. You know, one of the problems, fellow workers, brothers and sisters, is that we are constantly thinking about our temporary needs, thinking about our paychecks, thinking about our narrow little problems that we have. But if we can begin to think about what's going on outside of our lives and about what's happening with our state government and what there is a connection, a direct, actual direct connection between this and here it is, and the lawmakers and the workers. Here's the introduction.
Thank you. Republican Party in the 2008 elections. Here's Joanne Wagnon
And I like the sister. I really do.
That I'm taping this on is that I think we have a window of opportunity
out there
for the next 2 years to regain the ground that we've lost. And we have two incredibly important events that are coming up. And one of them is redistricting. And I am of the opinion that the Republicans are just out to obliterate us. And that is their goal in the redistricting, is just to wipe us out. They as much as said so on January 3rd in the Topeka Capital Journal, where they were boasting about their plan to further go into to further weaken the Democratic ranks. I cut my teeth walking door to door in Topeka, Kansas. My campaign treasurer is sitting in the back of the room. We were among the few Democratic families in our neighborhood, and we won that campaign, walking door to door, and getting out and talking to voters, and I know what kind of support candidates need. My husband and I together have run in 14 contested elections. He was on the state school board for that 12 tumultuous years, and we've won 14 of those 12. So I know something about what it takes to win campaigns. I'm going to move into the state party headquarters on March the 3rd, and I plan to be there. And all this business about can't get your phone calls returned and can't get data that you need, we're going to clean that up, okay? I mean, that's just got to stop, because you all have to have access to that. I'm going to raise money. I hate doing it. I'm going to raise money. Lake Hinchard's going to raise money. We're going to ask caucuses to raise money, county parties to raise money, districts to raise money, and we're going to raise enough money to mount a credible election campaign.
Good.
And we're going to keep most of it for candidates and not spend it on things we don't need. In addition to raising money, I'm going to go all across the state. So who was it up here that wanted to know how to get in touch with me? I'll give you my email.
Okay.
But you should be able to reach me in the state party office.
Will you be visiting us? You know,
you invite me and I'll come.
Okay.
You invite me
to K-State anytime.
Well, no, I don't want that. I want you to say,
date.
Come to our meeting on such and such a day. And I'll either say I can or I can't.
And I will interject that we invited her in Johnson County, and she did indeed come.
Right.
So, we've invited others who didn't come.
And I will come. And that's my commitment to the Democrat Party for the next 2 years, that I'm going to go out and raise money. I'm going to come into your counties and help things get re-energized, and in many cases organized where we don't have organization. And I will be accessible, and I will do that, and that's what I'm going to do for the next 2 years. In addition to recruiting candidates and raising money and organizing the party, I think there's a fourth piece of that, and I think our message is a problem. So I said there were two things that we've got to get a handle on. One of them is going to be redistricting, and the second is figuring out how to target our message that we get back the voters that were there in 2008 and were not there in 2010. And I don't know what the strategy on that is going to be, but the Colorado Democratic Party went through a very involved process in 2004 and 2005 that led to the development of a strategic plan that pulled in counties, pulled in all kinds of resources. And as a result, 5 years later, they have a Democratic governor, a new Democratic senator, and a Democratic majority in their legislature. And that's where I'm headed. And if you want to go with me, I invite you to come along and invite you to call me and get me involved with what you're trying to do. I don't have all the answers. I've got a huge amount of energy and a lot of experience to draw on, and I think we can do things better, and I think we must. So,
yeah. You mentioned the dreaded beast of raising money. I have seen one small donor email in 5 years from the state party.
This is Joanne Wagner, one of a friend from 15 years ago who showed up at the clinic in Topeka at a time when I least expected anyone to help us before it was invaded by protesters. Fortunately, the Topeka Police Department intervened and stopped the invasion. I can't say the same nowadays, sometimes. However, I want to give you more clips from the rally. Now, this is an interesting clip. First off, did you pick that up about how Joanne was talking about what they're thinking about with the Kansas Democratic Party about being redistrict out of existence? That is an interesting problem where the Kansas Republican Party, in collusion with many of their insensitive and stupid followers, are allowing them to be redistricted out of existence, the Democratic Party. This is a really interesting, I never thought of this, I never thought of that, of how the opposing political party would destroy the other one. In 2008, there was a big sweep in the election, and it was a mess. The Kansas Democrats, what President Obama called it, shellacking. And now Joanne Wagnon is talking about redistricting is the next threat that's coming. You know, I thought about this a long time, and I call the Kansas Democratic Party, as well as nationally, the loyal opposition. And I'm really worried that that's what's going to happen, is what the only opposition will be the opposition that is considered by Glenn Beck and Fox News and many of the Robotrons here in Kansas as disloyal, traitorous people. And that really bothers me. I tend to think that after seeing the rally, that there is a toehold of resistance and opposition. And I don't think people understand here in Kansas who are free thinkers, people who can think for themselves, critical thinkers. I'm really worried that we don't realize how much we have to not only network on the internet, but also organize ourselves to make more powerful voices, even in the right-wing media of Kansas. That is one of my big concerns, is that many of the Democratic and, for lack of better terms, liberal voices in the state of Kansas have not learned how to fight on their feet, walk right into right-wing conservative media mouthpieces and take them on. That's a big deal. I think that's one of the big failings of the Kansas Democratic Party, and I know it's a big failing of many people who are from a socialist persuasion or free thinkers, people who are just critical, independents. They're not taking on the media, and they. I think it's overwhelmingly a. I think it's a hollow. You know, I really believe this, brothers and sisters. I believe this, that the these are scarecrows. Fox News is a scarecrow. WIBW 580 AM scarecrow. These are scarecrows in our media landscape. You can stand up to these people. They're not that smart, honestly. Chris Kobach, you know, I was really shocked to learn that many of the leaders of the Kansas Democratic Party in Topeka yesterday did not know that Chris Kobach has a Sunday evening radio talk show out of 7:10 a.m., I believe it's KCMO, but it's 7:10 a.m. on the a.m. dial. And if you go to his website, you'll find out on that there is no podcast. I tend to think it's because Secretary of State, Kansas elected Secretary of State, Kansas, Chris Kobach, doesn't want people to record and hold him accountable for his crazy utterances that he gives on the radio show. Why aren't there podcasts? archived. Why isn't Chris Kobach's programs archived at 710 AM KCMO radio? And why aren't people asking if that is a conflict of interest or ethics? Is that an ethical violation for Secretary of State Chris Kobach to have a radio talk show in Kansas City, Missouri, talking about, in my opinion, racist ideas about how to rewrite the laws in Kansas against minorities? This is one small problem. Actually, it's a big problem. But people aren't talking about that. The Kansas Democrats do not talk about this. This goes in with this thing of what I've said earlier about how do you fight back? How do you resist these people? I tend to think, obviously, from Radio Free Kansas, that it begins with, first, creating public opinion. We have to find the means, whether through the internet or the radio stations or the television stations, we need to fight back by creating public opinion. And I was really impressed with what happened at the State House Saturday afternoon, yesterday, February 26th. Here's some more clips from it. I'd like you to listen to this because this is really, I think, this is how people need to fight. It really is. Here in Kansas. Now I'm looking for Okay, now this, I want to introduce this. This is a speech. Now, I'm going to have to turn it up and down because the audio quality is horrible. But this is at the speech, February 25th, 26th, yesterday, Saturday, at the State House. And it's a Democratic leader in the House, Paul Davis. Paul Davis comes on and talks at the beginning, and it's very interesting because he brings up this law. It's a law that's coming up through the bureaucracy there in the legislature in Topeka that's anti-labor, anti-worker, anti-union. I think it's HB 2130. I'm not sure. But you'll hear it. And then you're going to, even more importantly, in the same clip, hear a guy who is the Senate leader, Senator Hensley, I believe. Now, I'll tell you what I know about him. Anthony. I think his name's Anthony. Damn, I can't remember. Hensley, I heard him in Wichita 8 months ago. And he gives a great speech. Here's an important part of the way he speaks. Hensley, he uses the old Republicans. In Wichita, when I was listening to him, six to eight months ago during a Democratic gathering there in Wichita, he gave a great speech. And if you followed me on my essays, I wrote about that. He used he quoted a letter from Dwight David Eisenhower to his brother, Milton Eisenhower. Well, I think it was in 53 or 54. He quoted him and brought up really sort of a famous letter he wrote to his brother about the use of special interests, especially oil. And he talks about those that would want to shut down or privatize Social Security. It's a great letter. Now, what Senator Hensley does, quite aptly, better than I do, is he uses the old, uses the old conservative Republicans. He quotes the actual words from the speeches of these old conservative Republicans to point out just how radically different the ones like Brownback and the Koch brothers and the Koch Republicans here in the state of Kansas are from just a brief period of time. When you get ready to listen to this, at the first 5-10 minutes, you'll hear Paul Davis. The audio quality is horrible, but you can hear him. But when Hensley comes on, Hensley, you can hear him quite clearly, talking from the Capitol building, State House in Topeka, talking about Alf Landon. Yes, the old guy that Nancy Kassenbaum, I believe it was Kassenbaum's father, if not grandfather, who was nominated for president against Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 30s. On the very spot where Hensley spoke, there is a plaque of Landon talking, accepting the nomination president against Roosevelt. And listen to what Hensley quotes from Landon's speech. Brothers and sisters, this is really good stuff. I hope you listen. Here we go with about 12 minutes. Now, Davis is not that good. Davis begins it. We'll do about 12 minutes. At the last, the first two or three minutes are rough. But Hensley, you can hear him quite loudly and clearly talking about the old Republicans of Alf Landon.
Guys, we're going to grab the first time. That's going to have a chance to shake their hands yesterday. They are working their tails off inside the building to make sure that we have what we need on this side of the building. I'd like to first introduce Representative Paul Davis, who is the House Democratic leader. Paul, please come.
this alone.
No, before you do it, let me get one more picture. Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, all right, tell me. That's no kid.
Let's fight together. Let our voices be heard in the Senate. I'm going to introduce right now a man who is going to lead the charge to defeat House Bill 2130, one of the greatest friends of working people in this state, Senator Anthony Hensley, Senate Democrat. Our brothers and sisters of the Tea Party are out on the outside. There's three of them. I just want you to know that we are the mainstream and that the extreme.
Today.
We will play against Sam Brownback and his extremist followers who believe public employees are only a drain on the state budget. And we must stand for the rights of the working men and women of Kansas to have their voices heard in our political process and fight against the Speaker of the House and those who would trample on those rights with the passage of House Bill 2130. And I can promise you that I and my colleagues in the Kansas Senate will do everything we can to defeat House Bill 2130. We stand today with the workers in Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, and across this country who are struggling to survive against all odds. We must believe, as Abraham Lincoln believed and said, if any man tells you he loves America, yet hates labor, he is a liar. If any man tells you he trusts America, yet fears labor, he is a fool. All that harms labor is treason to America. Today, I stand with you as neither a liar nor a fool. And I trust labor.
Helmsley speaking from the state steps on the south side of the Capitol building yesterday in Topeka, Kansas, a rousing speech, a wonderful dialectical speech where he brings out the old Republicans' talk about organized labor versus the new Republican talk, the Koch Republican talk about where we're at today. I think it's the shock doctrine. I really believe. I read this book by Naomi Klein, The Shock Doctrine, used in Chile. She writes a great book. I encourage you. I think we're in the midst of the shock doctrine nationwide. I'm going to play some a couple songs. Feel free to call in. Area code 646-716-8652. Let's talk about whatever you want. Let's try to keep it on cutbacks and the misery that's being given, delved out by the Kansas state legislature, many state legislatures, not just Kansas, from Wisconsin to Ohio, Indiana, and Kansas. It's spreading like wildfire. I think this is the fire of the future, people fighting against cutbacks, and I'll play a couple songs. Area code 646-716-8652. Please feel free to call in. Area code 646-716-8652. And let's talk about this. What is the path to the future? I have a couple more clips, but I'd rather hear from you. Here's David Robix, appropriately, John Brown.
Owen Brown was an abolitionist. John was Owen's son. He grew up in New England. He was born in Torrington. John Brown was a tanner and a man of many skills. He stood up for the workers who toiled in the mills. He stood up for the Indians. He stood up for the women, for the oppressed and the exploited. This good man stood with them. So when Kansas was bleeding, he went and joined the fray. If the slave trade wanted Kansas, the slave trade would have to pay.
riding on the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. With 2,000 of New England's best and bravest sons, Captain Brown fought in Kansas with a Bible and a gun. When Free Lawrence was on fire, lighting up the night, the border ruffians would flee. John Brown would stand and fight. Lincoln called him a fanatic, and he was the Christian who thought you should do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. Christ said, love your neighbor, and if your neighbor's held in slavery, he was one who felt his duty was to fight to set them free. Riding on the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. He drove the slave trade out of Kansas, then went to bordering Missouri, raided the plantations, no compromise, said he. Broke the chains and shackles, rode at night to Canada. Out of the nightmare, the devil's home, America. He was caught in Harper's Ferry, his family lying dead. They questioned him for hours as he lay down and bled. They hanged him on the gallows, they laid him in his grave. John Brown was a Christian, and he died to free the slave. Riding on the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand.
John Brown by David Robeck. So we've got callers. It's good to always good to get callers. I'm going to let them on. Let's first come on. I'll put first on, and then, by the way, line 1, 267, my favorite, Brian, will be on in Pennsylvania. But, Brian, hold on. I want to bring on some Kansas callers just for a few minutes. 646-716-8652. I think we have Mark, and 913, area code, are you there? Can you hear?
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Hello.
What do you think? What do you think of what's going on here on Radio Free Kansas about the meeting in Topeka? And I want to bring on Brian on line 1, 267. Turn your computer down, brother. I can hear a little feedback. And I want to bring. We'll get a discussion going on about what's going on with these cutbacks. Is this the shock doctrine that Naomi Klein has written about? Are they scaring us into laying our best friends off in the state government, the police, the prison guards, the teachers, the custodians of our public schools? Are they trying to convince us that times are so tough that we must lay off our workers here in the state? Is that, and all over from Wisconsin, everywhere, You hear the talk, Brother Mark. You know you are one of them. And you've heard the talk in Topeka. There are people rallying. What do you think of this, Mark?
Well, that bill is it's going to cut deep. In the public education system, we have to cut almost $500 million out of the public education because of Brownback's budget cuts. He cut $70, $75 per pupil in each school to cut the deficit, Kansas State deficit. But what's going to happen is people are going to lose their jobs. You know, from the custodian staff all the way up to, you know, the administration. It's not a good thing. You know, we're looking at some serious budget cuts. This year we're setting okay, but 2013, no one can figure out what's going to happen. Because in my school district, we cut $1.2 million out this year and then $1.6 million out in 2012 and 2013. We can't make any more cuts. I mean, it's just, there won't be any kind of support whatsoever. And the teachers will be, all your experience, your tenure, teachers have tenure, they'll be gone because they're going to get rid of them because they hire new graduates in at a cheaper price. So the quality of education is going to be cut. It's just a bad situation all the way around. And, speaking on that, the reason this is it's because of the conservatives or the right wing who put us in this situation in the first place. And now they're trying to blame, us left, the Democrats, that this is the only way we can fix it. Now, a lot of people don't want to hear this, but the only way to fix this is we have to raise taxes somewhere. Somewhere it's got to be raised, and I feel it's got to be should be raised on people making $250,000 more a year. They should tax the hell out of them. They should put a 48% tax on their personal income and assets. I mean, how much money do you really need?
Brother Mark, can you hear me?
Yes.
Mark, can you hear me? I want to open up the phone lines for a civil discussion. Because many people say that poor people, working people, cannot hold civil discussions. I would like to open up the phone lines with your permission on Radio Free Kansas.
Sure.
I have the lines are full, folks. But I have
bring them on.
Other callers. Will you bring them? Would you mind if I bring them on?
No. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Line one is I think a phone call from our friend, Brian from Pennsylvania. We'll introduce him, and then we have line three. Another caller has called in, 785 area code. First, Pennsylvania, my friend, Brian, I'm going to put him on and then introduce the next caller. Brian, are you there? Can you hear me?
Hello, Mike.
Brian, thank you so much, so very much for calling in. Mark, you might be familiar with Mark, regular caller. He's on air. And do you have a statement or a comment about, let's keep it to the subject right now, and then I want to bring on caller number three. Brian, thank you for calling in to Radio Free Kansas, brother.
Hey, it's always great to get a chance to talk to you. My comments are just that. We're gonna see this in most of the states, unless you live in Montana or one of the Dakotas. I mean, the states are bankrupt, and they're either going to get bailouts from the federal government, or they're going to make budget cuts. And personally, I think they're going to make budget cuts, and they're not going to balance the budget deficits in a lot of these states, and they're going to get a bailout from the government regardless. But we're going to see that we're in the era of gutting, cutting, and looting. I mean, that's just a reality. I was reading articles from Paul Craig Roberts, 3 and 4 years ago, and he was saying that we were in the age of austerity, and we're in a situation now where we can either continue to support these elites and give them massive tax subsidies, support their offshoring of jobs, support the open borders policies, and support this profligate spending in the Pentagon for the military contractors, for the CIA, and to fight these wars. But it's either one or the other. And really what we're doing now is we're setting up the same kind of conditions that they have in Tunisia, in Libya, and in Egypt, where you've got, you know, mass demonstrations. I mean, we very well could reach that point because we reached a crisis where the economy is in shambles and the elites don't want to give up their power. You know, they want to continue, making, you know, obscene profits at the expense of everyone else. But that's where we're at right now. And I think that if they push too far, that we might have some kind of a revolution. And quite frankly, I think that that's what we're going to need. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see bank bailouts. We're going to continue to see quantitative easing for the Federal Reserve. We're going to continue to see derivatives and commodity speculation. We're going to continue to see offshoring of jobs. We're going to continue to see, you know, poor soap and borders. And we're going to continue to be involved in these wars. And, hey, the way Obama's talking, maybe we're going to get involved in Libya. So I think that's where we're at. I mean, I know that's more of a national overview, but what's going on in Kansas and Wisconsin is going to be going on everywhere.
Wait a minute. One at a time. I'm going to bring on a third caller, and I agree with you, Brian. I think we may be approaching a period. And remember, poor working people have no manners, and I'm joking. But I'm saying I'm going to bring a third caller on, 785, and let's all try not to walk on each other in the old CB language. Let's not walk on each other. But I agree with you. I think we're approaching, again, now, Brian, you've been a regular caller, haven't you, Brian, for a number of years. You've talked to me several times about how Radio Free Kansas is one of the few voices in a military. Are you there? Can you hear me? There's a lot of noise now. Remember, folks, when you online, if you drag your phones around, everybody hears that. But, Brian, you one of the things you pointed out about my voice and Radio Free Kansas is that we're talking about defunding the Pentagon. The gorilla in the room, our politicians, you know, it's become quite horrible, and that they're cowardly. Do you agree, Brian?
I do agree.
They're not talking about the big gorilla in the room, which is the Pentagon. And I'm going to bring on another caller. Now, I know most of the rich folk and the people say that poor folk and working people don't know manners. But we know manners here on Radio Free Kansas. I'm going to bring on area code 783. Try not to walk on each other, and let's try to keep our statements succinct and concise and let the other people talk. I know, Brian, you're very good at this. And Mark, Brother Mark, I know you are too. So at 785, I don't know who you are, but you are welcome, more than welcome on Radio Free Kansas. Welcome to Radio Free Kansas. Can you hear me?
Are you talking to me, Michael?
785.
785. Michael,
yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can. All of us can hear you.
Okay, this is Terry.
And, Terry, do you want to give us your impressions? I know you attended the State House demonstration, and do you have any comments to Brian and Mark?
Well, I agree with Brian and Mark both, generally. I think the Wisconsin event has functioned somewhat as a wake-up call for a lot of people who've been asleep, and at least I hope that's the situation. There are a couple of things, though. I'm not quite sure what the timeline of this total meltdown is going to be because of some unknown factors. The uprisings in the Middle East have begun to increase the price of oil. You know, speculators will keep driving that price up until, you know, people out here who are working people are going to cut back on consumption, and that's going to, you know, make a huge impact on our economy again. And I just, you know, I don't know. I'm no... I don't know what the future is going to be, but I don't see anything good in the even in the near term. That's
Well, what I see is so, it's going to be the workers, state workers, the workers of this country are going to starting to uprise against, stand up against the state and local governments. That's what's going on right now. If you look at what's going on in the Middle East, Egypt, Libya, they're standing up to the dictatorial type governments, and it's the same thing here. It's the American people. The American workers are getting tired of being pushed around and overtaxed and making these sacrifices for what? For big government. That's what's going on.
And rich corporations and their owners.
Well, that's I am the pulse of the school district I work in. I feel the pulse.
Yeah.
And the workers here and the teachers here are done. They are done. They're tired of being cut, and living in constant fear of losing their jobs, especially when you have teachers that have been here for 20 years, you know, worrying about losing their pension. Because, you know, they can fire you or lay you off, and, you know, you don't collect your retirement. Right? You have to retire to collect your retirement. If they fire you or let you go, you don't collect your retirement. So if you got teachers that have been in this district for 30 years and they come up and give you your pink slip, you don't have no retirement. You have what you paid into CAPERS. That's it. Period. That's what they're going to do because that's a cheap way out. They're going to let these people go so they cannot collect the retirement. They'll collect 99 weeks of unemployment and get a gross check for the amount of money that they paid in CAPERS. And what's going to happen is CAPERS is basically be dissolved, and that's the end of the retirement system for the state of Kansas.
Right.
That's because we don't have a union.
We don't have any what, Mark? I didn't catch it.
Well, that's because we don't have a union. Kansas is a right-to-work state.
Right. Okay.
You know?
I got you.
And we have no protection. Workers have no protection in a right-to-work state because if you try to form a union in the state of Kansas, they fire you. So it's impossible to form a union here, especially in school districts, especially for the custodial staff or the staff that support the schools. Now, the teachers do have a union, but it's very weak. It's not strong. It doesn't have the lobbyists that the big corporations have for big oil, as you would say, or anything else. The teachers don't have the money to put out for lobbyists to lobby for them in Topeka or Washington. So, and the rich know this. These big capitalists, these corporations know this. And so do the Republicans. They know this. And that's why they're cutting education. Remember this. This is something you all need to understand. When there's cuts, the first thing they do is they cut the weakest departments, which is the Department of Education, Department of Social Welfare, and Department of Social Security. Those are the weak departments because they don't have the money for lobbyists to go lobby for them. And that's what's going to happen in the country unless we start standing up against them.
Which means what? I mean, just how do you do that? You know, big corporations, and they have, you know, huge resources. And what do we have?
Do.
We have the ability to go to the state house and stand out in front and holler for a while, but how much good does that really do?
We have numbers. We have numbers.
Yeah.
You
right.
Know, if it was a nationwide blue flu epidemic where every worker in the state of Kansas, if every state worker in the state of Kansas called in sick one day, you shut the government down. That's what you have to do. We have to organize, and we have to shut the government down. Shut them down for a week. What are they going to do, fire you? They're going to cut your jobs. They're going to cut your wages. What the hell?
Yeah.
Well,
no,
I
think that's a good idea. I just, you know, just that
we,
group out there.
We have numbers.
Yesterday was a small fraction. So I'm just not sure
how many you get to
strike.
You're talking a quarter of a million state employees. If only half of them, only a third of them just called in sick for a week, you shut the government down. Shut it down. And people to me. Well, people are worried about losing their jobs. You know, you're going to lose them anyway, guys. You're going to lose them. Or they're going to cut your wages. That's what they're talking about doing right now. It's cutting the wages.
I want to bring something up, and I thought it was interesting. The audio was so terrible on, but there were prison guards, guys in prison guard unions speaking at the State House, and they were talking about this, about how they're feeling the heat, prison guards and cops. Even cops are feeling the heat about cutbacks. Now, look, government cannot continue to grow. I mean, I have an actual look. I actually agree in certain spots, in certain respects, with Governor Brownback about you just can't keep growing the government if your population base is not growing, and our tax base is not growing. Now, what Brownback and many of his Koch brothers, K-O-C-H brothers, and Brother Brian is on the line from Pennsylvania. I want to hear what he has to say about the Koch brothers. Now he hasn't been on the Radio Free Kansas for quite a while, but I want to hear what Brian from Pennsylvania. Now I know in Philadelphia they only had about 300 to 500 people showing up. Conservatively, 500 to 1,000 people showed up in Topeka. Brother Brian, could you tell us what you think about Koch brothers as a conservative? Because I know you're a conservative. What do you think about Koch brothers, Brian? Are you there? Brian, can you hear
me? I'm here. Well, I told you last time I called, which I guess it has been a while, but that they're neoconservatives posing as libertarians. And it's just they're part of an effort to make sure that the Tea Party movement does not become some kind of threat to the country club Republican establishment, which is they've been pretty successful at. Because if you look at the 3-month extension of the Patriot Act that Obama signed, probably only one or two candidates that were elected by the Tea Party or supported by the Tea Party were opposed to that extension. The only one I can think of is Rand Paul. So I think that's just evidence that the Tea Party, which was originally more of a libertarian, paleoconservative movement, has been completely taken over by the Republican establishment. And so the Koch brothers, to me, being such supporters of it, are symbolic of the fact that the whole Tea Party movement is just it's been, basically dominated, controlled by the Republican establishment, which is unfortunate because we desperately need some kind of a third-party movement or alternative to the Democratic and Republican establishments. But that's what we're up against because, when you look at the super rich, I mean, they're just making obscene profits, and what they do is they control every movement, and that's what they've always done. A lot of people still don't know that, Nazi fascism and Italian fascism in Italy and the Bolshevik Revolution were all financed by Wall Street. And so these people finance these movements, which would seem to be in opposition to their, to their power. If they finance it and they don't fear it, it means they must control it. And that's what the only conclusion you can come to with the Tea Party movement, and that's the only conclusion you can come to with the Democratic Party, these supposed faux populists. They're funded by Wall Street, and when Obama ran for president, his biggest donor was Goldman Sachs. So that had to tell you that any kind of financial reform bill that was passed wasn't going to do anything with derivatives or, bring back a Glass-Steagall or regulating commodities trading. And that's just how the whole system works now. We have these elites that they control everything. They control the right wing, the left wing, independent movements, the Tea Party. And if you had some kind of a mass left-wing movement, if you want to call it a coffee party, I'm sure that would be controlled by people like George Soros or Goldman Sachs or General Electric. And that's just the way things are. That's where we're at. That's just how much power the super rich have right now. And the super rich, by the way, are not people making $250,000 or $500,000 or $1 million a year. I mean, that really – I hate to tell people, because of inflation, that's the upper middle class. I mean, they're not really the people that matter. The people that matter are the banks and the people running these multinational corporations.
Well, you know,
hindsight's 2020.
No.
Yeah, but
No, let me say something first. I agree with you. Being a person who once made $250,000 a year, once for 1 year, I agree with you. And there was all kinds of tax loopholes, even for that income bracket. And I've got to tell you, anything above $250,000 a year, that's with two wage earners, that's my wife and I both, that was 1 year we made that, and there was total tax deductions on office and everything. Our taxes went down, way down. I mean, it was like amazing. I mean, I remember telling her, you mean we're making $250,000 a year and we only pay like $2,500 in taxes after all of our deductions? I can't believe it. And then I began to realize what was going on. I'd met a few other people who made, not many, Brian, in Pennsylvania, but I met a few people who made much, much, much more money than me in that year. And I began to wonder, just what are they getting away with? And that was in 2000, 1999, 2000. And I think of these Wall Street people getting bonuses, $130 million bonuses in Wall Street, and they're just walking scot-free. Brian, as a paleoconservative, speaking as a brother who tries to think, I try to think like a paleoconservative, and I just can't help to ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You know, do you watch, what's his name, David Letterman?
No, not recently.
Well, I got, yesterday, when I was at this tremendous demonstration of, I've never seen this, but I guess Rand Paul, now that's Ron Paul's junior, his son, showed up on David Letterman last week. Did you happen to see that?
No, I heard he was on, but I didn't get to catch that.
This is just incredible, because I'm speaking as a brother with you, all right?
Yeah.
I am a libertarian. I'm a grassroots libertarian. I'm not a Koch libertarian. I believe in civil. But Rand Paul got on David Letterman and said that he just went on and on about union busting, and then he never said, here he is with tens of millions of viewers on David Letterman, and he didn't say one thing about the Pentagon, one thing about the military-industrial complex. That really offends me. I became physically ill, thinking here is a man who was elected in and he doesn't talk about cutting the defense budget. That is just drives me goddamn crazy. I'm sorry, Brian, but and now I'm done. I want all the brothers, I want Terry and Mark to feel free to talk. But they're cutting our custodians, they're cutting our teachers, and they don't even talk about the Pentagon. That drives me nuts.
Well, you know, I mean, he's not the man his father was. I mean, that was very clear when he ran for office and the way he kind of, you know, tried to massage some of the problems he had with the Republican establishment, and that as his campaign went on, he was talking less and less about the Federal Reserve and the military budget and less about, you know, typical, you know, establishment Republican issues. Not that they're not important, but, you know, again, what's a bigger cost to this country? You know, I mean, is it the military budget or is it, you know, Pell Grant scholarships, you know, which Obama's talking and the Republicans are talking about cutting, you know, so he's really trying to he's not the man his father is. I mean, I think that was very clear early on when he ran for office that he's not going to, you know, act like a libertarian. So
Robespierre, during the French Revolution, Robespierre said it best. Capitalists, we do not mind as long as they don't try to power their way into our government. And that's what's going on out now. The capitalists are powering their way there into our government. And the defense budget is the biggest budget in our federal budget. We pay them. No one even knows how much money goes to the defense budget.
We don't have any idea. You know, we have no idea. And when people talk about the military budget, you know, that how do we know how much money we're giving to the CIA and how much money they have off the books? And
so what's that tell you, Brian?
Department of Homeland Security.
Well, we're becoming a militaristic government, man. When Napoleon Bonaparte was of France, he gave his armies total control of everything. Money's no matter the difference. As long as he could conquer Europe, that's all he cared about. And that's what we're doing. We give the Defense Department, in the phase of defense, I call offense, it should be called offensive department, we gave them total range. The budget is top secret. No one knows what it is, and they won't disclose it. You know, they say,
Don't you think, Mark, that's an indication that the government is already, you know, a militarized government?
Of course they do.
I mean, they
of course
already control the government. If they didn't, then somebody would be investigating and auditing the Defense Department, but they're not. And nobody's talking in Washington about corporate taxes, hardly. There may be a few. And reinstituting the estate tax, which is paid probably by the top 0.1% of wage earners, of earners.
Well,
they've already got control of the government. This is a fascist government.
You're very true. Yep. This is a militaristic government. And there's no difference between the United States of America and Libya, except the Libyans, thank God, bless their hearts, have stood up to the dictator, Gaddafi, as we should stand up against our government. Because this government, I'm not talking about Obama or one certain person, but just the basics of capitalism. Because this country has went from is a capitalistic type of government backed with the support of the military. Because the capitalists give the military, Brian, you know this, I don't have to say it, but I'm going to say it for the listeners, the capitalists don't mind giving money to the defense budget because they know they have their butt. The military has the capitalist butt. If us working people uprise against them, the capitalists really rely on the military to step in. That's what
well,
boils down
to. A lot of that military budget is funneled right back to the capitalists.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
Military industrial complex. The industrial complex are the largest capitalists in the world. It's just circular. It goes in, you know, the tax comes from the taxpayers generally. Us poor assholes out here that work our butts off and pay our taxes. Goes to Washington, goes to the Pentagon, and then it goes to these Lockheed Martin and Boeing.
No, actually, I want to interject something. First, we lost Brian. He'll call back. Brian will call back. But, you know, there is something in what you're saying because $35 billion last week, $35 billion contract to Boeing. Boeing in Wichita is now got a 35, and it's in Wichita and Washington State, Seattle. They're celebrating, and you can go to Google, just Google Sam Brownback Boeing, B-O-E-N.
Oh, yeah, they're popping their champagne corks, but they're a year behind, or over a year behind on their 787. They're having terrible times with their suppliers, and are they even going to be able to build these tankers?
Well,
especially you know, when you're looking at big cutbacks in spending. I don't know. Excuse me. I guess I'm not being civil here. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right, brother. You could do that. When we get four or five people on the line at the same time. But look, here, I'm amazed that the people of the state of Kansas aren't going, well, wait a minute, $35 billion for an Air Force tanker. That's an Air Force tanker. It has nothing to do with our state government. wind propel turbines or wind, you know.
That's so that we can keep our nuclear bombers in the air 24 hours a day. That's what it used to be for anyway. So we can fly from the United States to Saudi Arabia or to Iraq to drop bombs. Yeah, it's fucking. It's just obscene. But I don't know how to get out. You know, the people have their power is in their numbers. But you know, the American people have been so pacified, they're so asleep. And I hope Mark's about right about them waking up. I hope that his little piece of the world out there that he is listening to, that are waking up, is an indication that they're waking up all over the country. And I kind of see that. Maybe it's true. I hope so.
Well, I assure you there, the powers that be listen to Radio Free Kansas. But hold on. My clock struck. But I've got to tell you something. I really wonder, do you think this thing going on with Egypt in Madison, Wisconsin, is this good? I mean, and you were there. You saw what was going on at the State House. Is this the beginning, or is this sort of the last death knell of the Kansas Democratic Party?
It could probably go either way. It depends on what people do now. And it depends on what the government does at this point. If Brownback keeps pushing his right-wing agenda and keeps cutting and, you know, eliminating social programs and talking about corporate tax breaks, and repealing regulation that protects the population, then maybe the people will wake up and do something about it. But I don't know. You know, I don't know. I can't see the future. I'm hopeful. I think yesterday was a good sign that something can happen. But it's got, you know, the reason that people were out there yesterday is because they can see this thing hitting them in the pocketbook. And that's, you know, people are going to have to be hungry or frightened to get out there and do something. And it's going to take a lot of people, because that's our only power, is our numbers. We don't have any money. We don't have any media except for Radio Free Kansas. So, it's going to be tough.
Thank you for saying that.
I think when we woke up, Abe, is when gasoline, I hate to be, what?
The lines are full, but nobody's putting their hands up. You must put line one on your phone. After you call in, you must push one, and that will give me an icon to let me know that you want to talk. The lines are full. Actually, I have five lines. There's more lines, but you must push one to get in queue. And I just wanted to throw this at you, Mark. And because it's your theory that the resistance is sort of beginning on a mass scale here in Kansas, do you think that it's actually going to happen in places like where you work, Mark? Because there's no unions there that I know of maybe the teachers. I mean, how is resistance going to come in Kansas?
Well, the way I see it, what's going to happen in Kansas is that first, when we get the first wave of cuts of personnel, the second wave is going to come, and people are just going to start calling in sick. People are just quick coming to work, and they're going to shut them down. That's what's going to happen. Once you start shutting public schools down because of lack of personnel coming to work, that's when you get people's attention, and that's what I think is going to happen, because like I said, they're going to cut people who's getting ready for retirement. They're going to cut them out so they don't have to pay retirement to them. And the people who are left are going to see that. And it's going to be really up to if they can be, want to be chicken shit and say, oh, I'm not going to do anything. But I don't think that's the momentum that's going on in the labor movement right now throughout the world and throughout our country. Is that I really feel that people are going to start standing up and say, okay, if you want to shut down, we're going to shut you down. We'll shut you down all the way. And that's what I feel is going to happen.
Well, we have 10 minutes for the show, and you're both welcome. Brian has to call back from Pennsylvania. But you're welcome to keep your comments.
comment. We've got quite a few minutes. We've got a few minutes, 10 minutes. I'm wondering. I'm thinking seriously about what is the future for Kansas after Democrats. You know, the Democrats. They actually had buses, nice buses, picking them from the Ramada Inn down to the State House. And I must say, I did a head count. Most of the union people that were there were in the majority. The union people were in the majority. There was, I would say conservatively, 500 to 1,000 people at any given time there. It was a very interesting phenomenon, socially, a social phenomenon. I had not seen at the State House in a long time in bad weather. But I won't leave this with you brothers and sisters, listeners. Do you think this is just the beginning? I mean, it's a horrible weather. Maybe the spring is yet to come. What do you think, both of you?
I think it is the beginning. Go ahead, Brian.
This is not Brian. It's Terry.
Terry.
Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I think I've already said my piece about it. You know, I can't see the future. It was a hopeful sign. I was there yesterday, and it was just great. It was all awe-inspiring. And inspiring to me to, you know, to do my work as a Democratic operative. That's with a big D. I'm a low-level functionary of the Democratic Party in Kansas, and I'm inspired, and I really enjoyed the clip that you played today with Joan Wagnon. But at the same time, I really can't speak out about what I think of the Democratic Party on the national level, because it's really disappointing and discouraging to see that the Democratic Party on the national level at this point is no different than the Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. I hope people rise up. I'm hopeful. That's all. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, people are going to rise up. The working class is going to rise up. It doesn't make a difference if they're Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, or Independent. The working class is going to rise up. Especially right now, they have the bill where they're going to cut minimum wage from $7.25, which is the federal minimum wage, back down to the working class is going to rise up, and this is just the beginning. The people in Washington and all the capitals of states are worried. They're very worried because they know that, like you said, like Bob said, you know, over 50% of the states in the United States are broke, are bankrupt. They don't have any money. And if the federal government don't step in and bail them out, which I don't understand, the federal government's even bankrupt.
Well,
we're talking
can't
about
do that. Yeah.
We're talking about a $7.5 trillion deficit, you know, and
yeah.
You know, we got loans out to different countries around the world. Who's going to pull them when they start seeing our society, our economic system starting to fail, which it will again. All the top economists, even Warren Buffett, said that, you know, we are not out of the recession. It's going to get worse. Gas prices are going to climb to $5 a gallon by summer. We're talking about utilities, electricity, natural gas, tripling in the next year or so. And they're talking about cutting wages, really? Yeah, there's definitely going to be a march or uprising of the labor force in this country. And like I said before, people say, well, how are we going to do this? Well, we have the numbers. We are the backbone of this country. We are the workers. We are the ones that make this country move forward. And if we all stop, everything stops. And that's what's going to happen.
Do you think that that's possible? I'm not sure. Can you hear me, brother?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think, I mean, in the face of these cutbacks going on locally on the state, is there anything to the shock doctrine? Mark, you may not have read the book by Naomi Klein, but I know Terry has. Is this something to do with the shock doctrine, Terry?
Well, I don't, yeah, probably. And it has to do, yeah, they're taking advantage of the economic account, which was created by Wall Street, by the way, to in order to impose austerity measures. And that's austerity is a code word for robbing the poor and giving to the rich. You know, that's right. They're talking about making cutbacks on all these social programs and wages for workers, and at the same time they're talking about tax breaks for business. You know, what does that mean? That means that they're taking from the poor and giving to the rich. And they're doing that in order to respond to the economic crisis and the budget crisis. And, of course, it's the shock doctrine being utilized again in order to rob the poor people.
Well, the way I see it, you know, the working class is going to stand up. I mean, you can only beat a dog so much, and then before the dog turns on you, and that's what's going on right now.
Oh, I hope you're right, Mark. You know, the thing I've been reading about in Saudi Arabia in the last week, the king of Saudi Arabia has all of a sudden started to give all this money to the people. You know, once that starts happening in the United States, once they start loosening up a little bit and putting a little money back toward the working class, everybody's going to just go back to work and sit down in front of the TV with a beer and forget about it. That's my fear.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Good for you. Okay,
I don't
I'm
think
glad.
So. I don't think anybody's going to step in first.
Love my girl. She looking good.
Come on. I give her get on.
5-1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here yet out alive now. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try. The old get old and the young get stronger. May take a week and it may take longer. They got the guns, but we got the numbers. Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over. Come on! Across the floor with a flower in your hand, trying to tell me no one understands. Trading your hours for a handful of dimes. Gonna make it, baby, in our prime. Come together one more time.
Yeah.
see you.